Drive Time on RTE Radio 1. Sponsored by Zurich. For pensions, protection, savings and investments. At Zurich, we deal in peace of mind.
Tweet at DriveTimeRTE.
You're welcome back. Vladimir Putin has announced a temporary ceasefire in Ukraine to coincide with the anniversary of VE Day after Donald Trump said he was very disappointed with Russia. The Kremlin said today the truce will start at midnight on the 8th of May and last until the end of May 10th, with a pause centred around Russia's 80th anniversary celebrations, marking the end of the Second World War. So is this a signal that a permanent ceasefire is on the way? Well, who knows? I'm joined now by Ukrainian MP Ina Sovsun and also by Jeffrey Roberts, Emeritus Professor of History at UCC and Specialist in Russian and Soviet Foreign and Military Policy. You're both very welcome to the programme. Ina Sovsun, I might turn to you first of all, and we'll speak about the temporary ceasefire proposal in just a second. But is Russia still attacking Ukraine as we speak?
Well, we did have two air raid alerts in Kyiv alone during the day today, with the Russian drones attacking the city from different sides. So, yes, the attack is definitely ongoing. The air raid attacks are ongoing, and of course, they are progressing on the front lines as well. So we are not seeing any signs of the ceasefire at all.
Okay. Now, the ceasefire announced, the proposal is from the 8th of May to the 10th, and the Kremlin is saying that Ukraine should follow.
Well, our question would be then, why wait? If he really wants the ceasefire, why is he waiting for the date that is important for Russians? Because he doesn't really care about if he kills Ukrainians. He only cares to make a good picture for the Russian population on the day that is important to them. It does sound a bit hypocritical, basically saying we will stop killing you for one day when we are having celebration because we're too busy doing something else. If it's not a long-term ceasefire suggestion, that I don't know what it's worth. One day doesn't really make a big systemic difference.
What do you think? Why do you think it's being proposed then?
Well, I can imagine there can be some internal reasons inside Russia. He needs to show that there is some progress, that there are no attacks from the Ukrainians on the big victory parade that they are to hold in Moscow. So I do think that might have crossed their mind and that this might be important. It is an important date in Russia altogether. But maybe because they want to stay inside the negotiations process without actually leading to anything specific, but they have to respond to the signals from the sea, and that seems to be their way of responding. But it's not really a real suggestion that would actually change our lives here.
So maybe to keep Donald Trump on board, so to speak. It's the second time, Ina, that the Russians have put forward a temporary ceasefire, the first being the 30-hour ceasefire in Ukraine over the Easter weekend. Was that one adhered to? Because I've seen various reports of both sides saying that either side violated the ceasefire.
Well, the ceasefire was supposed to start 6 in the evening, and I have some friends who are on the front lines. I reached out to them at like 6:15 and asked if anything has changed within the last 15 minutes, and they said that they have not seen a single difference in how the Russian troops are behaving on the front line. So from the people on the front lines, what I've heard from several of them on different directions, none of them actually did see any suspension of fire on the Russian side.
Okay. Let's talk about Crimea for a moment and talks that any negotiated settlement could leave Crimea in the hands or within the territory of the Russian Federation. What is the view in Kyiv on that? Because I know there are various politicians saying that Vladimir Klitschko, for example, saying that ceding territory might be necessary.
Well, that is quite a unique perspective that Mr. Klitschko has. I wouldn't say that it is shared by many other Ukrainian politicians or by the Ukrainian population. The majority of the people inside the country do recognize that we probably wouldn't be able to take back Crimea with military means alone in the next, in the closest period of time, let's put it this way. But it doesn't mean that people are willing to give up on Crimea legally. So legally recognize that we're not fighting back for that territory, that it is Russian territory, and we are done with that. And there are two, I would say, two reasons for that. One, there are still Ukrainian people who are on that side of this war and who are waiting for the order to be restored and for them to stop living in Russian authoritarian regime. But also, I think there is this part of logic, which is best described by this proverb of if you give tiger a hand, he will come back for more. So if Crimea is recognized as part of Russia, what is there to stop them? Because this will actually prove that their strategy is working, and then they will come back for more.
Mm-hmm. Is that the pressure, though, coming from the US side, that you must cede something, even if it is Crimea?
Well, of course there is pressure from the American side. There is a process of negotiation. There is a process of adjusting our views. It's not an easy one. I do think that there has to be lots of explanation about the situation in Crimea and in other parts of Ukraine. But I wouldn't say that, the pressure is... I mean, yes, the pressure is strong, but it's not something that cannot be changed on the American side as well. We have seen the change of tone from Donald Trump over the last, 24 hours, and that was quite significant. So I think that there are different people reaching out to him who can change his opinion as well.
Okay. Ina Sovsun, Ukraine MP, thank you very much indeed for joining us. I'm also joined by Jeffrey Roberts, who's Emeritus Professor of History at UCC and a specialist, as I say, in Russian and Soviet foreign and military policy. Jeffrey, you're very welcome to the programme. You're in Russia, I believe, at the moment. What is the mood
That's
like
right.
there before we discuss any of the detail that we were discussing with Ina? Is it evident that it's a nation at war? Are the sanctions biting there?
Well, I'm in Russia to because it's the 80th anniversary of the victory over Nazi Germany. So I'm in Russia to talk about the Second World War, the Great Patriotic War, not the Ukraine War. Yeah, I mean there are signs of the war in terms of recruiting posters for volunteers to join the Russian armed forces, but really not. But apart from that, not very much. Obviously, it's on the war's covered on TV quite a lot. Sanctions. The only sign I see in relation to sanctions is that prices have gone up since I was last here a few months ago. So yeah, there's definitely signs of inflation, and that's obviously connected to Western sanctions.
Okay, but that is quite a privileged position compared to the people of Ukraine who have. Missiles raining down on them, as Ina Sovsun has been telling us. What about any possible framework of a deal, as Donald Trump has called it today, and leaving Crimea in the hands of Russia? That is something that is not countenanced in any widespread way in Ukraine, says Ina Sovsun.
Well, Russia and Ukraine are at war at the moment, and both sides' citizens have missiles and drones raining down them. Sure, the Ukrainians are having more missiles and drones raining down them because Russia has the advantages. But both civilians on both sides of this war are suffering. As far as Crimea is concerned, well, Crimea has been part of Russia since 2014. There's no possibility whatsoever that it's ever going to be returned to Ukraine. And this American proposal, this US proposal that that Crimea will be recognized, legally recognized as being part of Russia, is just recognizing that reality. My understanding
so, no, hang
is,
on, it's not recognizing a reality because the UN doesn't recognize Crimea as part of Russia, nor do the majority of governments around the world.
Well, the majority of citizens in Crimea want to be part of Russia. So that's one.
In a referendum that was declared invalid by the UN.
Well, the referendum was disputed, but here's the point.
No,
Paul,
it declared invalid.
The United States is. My understanding is the United States is proposing to recognise Crimea as being legally part of Russia. If the United States does that, that will pave the way for lots of other countries.
Yeah,
around
Trump's
the world
United States. It
Crimea
needs to be
that,
pointed
which is the whole point of the proposal. I mean, this is the Americans are making this offer to the Russians as part of this peace deal, this peace package. Trying to put together, which is going to lead to an end to the war, which of course will stop.
We don't know
the missiles raining down.
We don't
on
know
Ukraine's
that because there were deals with Putin before, and it didn't end his rapacity for war. I mean, what about the proverb that Ina Sovsun gave us? Give the tiger a hand, and he'll come back for more.
Well, but if there's another proverb we can use, if you ride the tiger, it's going to eat you. And what's happening at the moment is that, you know, the longer the war goes on, the greater the defeat that Ukraine is going to suffer. The more Ukrainians are going to die, the more destruction that Ukraine is going to suffer. Perhaps the very existence of the Ukrainian state is going to come into existence.
Well, I mean, you've summed it up very nicely there. They'll continue until they gobble up Ukraine. Well, is that the aim?
What makes sense here is for Ukraine to get off the tiger, right, and to actually take advantage of this opportunity that's offered by the Trump administration to arrive at some kind of peace.
Can I put it to you?
It won't be pretty. It won't be pretty. It won't be nice. But you know, it will end the war. It will end the suffering.
Can I put it to you that that's patent nonsense? Because they are fighting for their sovereign territory. They were invaded as a sovereign nation. And if that were to happen, Jeffrey, then the message to Vladimir Putin is your illegal wars will be rewarded. It's quite simple, isn't it?
But they are fighting for their sovereignty and independence, but the longer the war goes on, the less sovereignty and less independence they're going to have, because they're losing the war. They're losing territory. They're effectively losing their statehood as a result of the war. So they need to end the war in order to save their statehood, save their sovereignty, what's left of it, their independence.
Can I read you this? This is from the previous Trump administration in 2018 and the former Secretary of State, Pompeo. He said, "We will never recognize Russia's illegal annexation of Crimea by force. We don't want to enshrine this de jure at the level of law, because that would effectively be endorsing Russia's act of aggression against its neighbour."
Well, the current Trump administration presumably takes a different view from that. Their view is that Crimea is part of Russia and remain part of Russia. There's no point in continuing to fight a war for a completely unobtainable goal.
Well, do you know what? International law doesn't flip-flop like Trump administrations, though.
Well, actually, international law flip-flops all the time, all the time, Cormac. And you know, as the Russians will point out to you, is that, you know, the international community or some states don't recognise the Crimea and its secessionist actions, but they do recognise what happened in Kosovo. So international law is a very politically malleable
agency. Point to the international law that shows that the annexation of Crimea was legal.
Well, what Russians will say, they will point to the Kosovo precedent.
No, the point of the law,
Hang on. Sorry, look, do you want to consume? This seems to me to be a rather technical discussion about international law.
You're saying that it flip-flops and it's pliable in that way. So point to the law that says that the invasion of Ukraine or the annexation of Crimea was legal.
The World Court made a judgment that it was permissible for, you know, peoples to express the right to their self-determination. And what the Russians say, what Putin says, he said what happened in Crimea is that the Ukrainian people expressed their right to self-determination. They want to be part of Russia.
Now, in a referendum, right, which I said to you was declared invalid by the UN.
Look, come on. I'm not saying whether that's right or wrong, or whether that's legal or illegal. All I'm saying is that, you know, the reality is that Russia, Crimea is part of Russia, and that reality is not going to change. I'm also saying there's this war going on, right, which is destroying Ukraine and its people, and that it's only going to, it will be a benefit of Ukraine if that war were to come to an end as soon as possible. And the Trump administration, for all its faults, for all the criticisms I would have of Trump personally, is at least trying to do something about that situation. Whether it will succeed, I don't know. I hope it does succeed.
Well, I would say that the vast majority of people in Ukraine say that is not for the benefit of the people of Ukraine, nor the people fighting on the front lines for self-determination.
Cormac, what public opinion polling data in Ukraine shows consistently is that more and more people in Ukraine recognise that they're going to have to give up some territory. They're going to have to make a compromise peace with Russia. Yeah. And it's better to end the war now, but to keep on fighting it and end up with your country being completely destroyed. So public opinion in Ukraine is moving in my direction, Cormac, not in yours.
Okay. Thank you, Geoffrey Roberts, Emeritus Professor of History at UCC and Specialist in Russian and Soviet Foreign and Military Policy, and beforehand, Ukraine MP Ina Sovsun.